You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 027 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show. I am Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson, my co-host Brad the White Shadow Jones. As we do each and every podcast, we open up with a quick thank you for listening to the podcast on KFGO.com. You can find us there on the podcast page. You can also find us on iTunes, the Pinto and White Shadow Show on iTunes. Leave comments for us on our Facebook when we post this on Facebook or on the comments section on the page. Of course, Marcus from Mayville, our most dedicated listener to this point, has left us another comment, which we'll get to eventually. If you want to email us, you can email us at pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. That's pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at PintoKFGO. You can follow Brad Jones, White Shadow. He's
at the Bison Guy.
So now that we've covered all that, NSYNC opened up the music, the podcast, a little Bye 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 by NSYNC. Brad Jones was looking at me very curiously. Now, here's how I'll couch this. Big concert coming in a month.
Yep.
To the Fargo Dome. Maybe more than a month, maybe less. I can't remember. JT.
Yep.
Coming to the Fargo Dome. Do you respect him more because he took the route of going through a boy band first before going to his solo career and has made himself this big guy? Or would you respect a guy more who would, say, break out on his own right away, like a Bruno Mars?
I would say this is more impressive because you're kind of a punchline to the general music community when you come out of a boy band. And to get basically the universal respect that he's gotten. I mean, even guys like us who grew up and were in high school in the, oh my gosh, he's just so great! Ah!
98 age. Degrees, yeah. Backstreet Boys,
oh,
yes, all
gosh,
that stuff.
Yeah. We immediately roll our eyes whenever we hear anything about those, or at least we did at that point because, you know, I had a sister 2 years younger than me. So sick of hearing that music while I was going through high school. And to get to the point where he has, where everybody, the people who initially could not stand him,
right,
were just like, you know what? I you're the man.
He's a
you
triple
just are.
Threat.
Yeah,
he
you
can
just
act,
are.
Dance, and sing. Yeah. Now, the other question that goes into this, because of JT's success, do we respect boy bands more now? Like a band like One Direction?
No.
You don't?
No.
Because I do musically.
You can't show me the exception and try to convince me that that's the rule. And I think that's something we do in sports a lot. And I think, that's what's happening in music. There's a lot more guys from boy bands who've tried to go on to have solo careers and
have
failed miserably.
Aaron Carter,
rather than what Timberlake has done. So, no, it doesn't. But I think it makes you appreciate the boy bands from days of yore a little bit more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from. I still listen to that stuff, or don't listen to it stuff, because I actually don't have any NSYNC or anything like that on my iPod. But I go back and look at it and go, were they actually musically talented, or was it just kind of one of these things where they look good and they could dance and they just were like, they came at you with a bunch of lights and sounds and you were like, ooh, ah.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit. I mean, and there's levels within that. I mean, there's levels of, this is kind of, a lot of people could do what they did, but NSYNC still did it better than everybody else. I think there's a lot of different boy bands that were out there. There is even, we talked about the three main ones that you remember, but there were a bunch of other ones that came along during that point that, you know, LFO, for instance. I mean, there's so many of them that you just kind of, okay, you have one song and then they just kind of fade away. So I wouldn't say the whole genre gets respect, but you know, if you do it right, you get the right group together, then it works. But I think there's a lot of people that could come on and have that one or two big songs and then kind of float away.
Are you going to JT?
I am not.
Neither am I. Are you a little bit sad that you're not? I kind of would like to see. I'm going to say it here. I'd like to see him live in concert.
If I have the opportunity to go, I probably wouldn't turn it down because I think it would be a good show. I think he would put on a good show.
Would
no
you go with
what.
Another guy?
Hmm.
I mean,
are you asking me on a date?
No.
Is that what's happening here?
That's not happening here on the 027 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show.
Just making sure. I wasn't sure what direction you were going.
No, the reason I put it that way is because I feel like concerts are a date thing.
Yeah.
And the only way I'm going to a concert with another guy is if it's a non-date-like.
If you're going like the Red Hot Chili Peppers or
something like
that.
Something like that. Right, exactly. You know, like a real cool band, like, Eric Clapton's playing here or whatever, you know, something like that.
Did you just say you take a guy to Eric Clapton?
Well, I mean, to see him play guitar, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I take a dude, whatever. But you know what I'm saying. JT seems more like
there's so many different routes you could have gone there, and you went Clapton.
Yeah, why not?
You look wonderful tonight. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Clapton to me, I would rather.
I mean, I would appreciate if you the guitar. Say, I'd go, well, sure, but in that case, go Metallica. Don't go.
No,
Clapton.
Too heavy. Okay. Too heavy for me. I get that Clapton's more of a classical guitarist where you're going to go, boy, I really need to put him on. It's date night. But, but Metallica, to me, just too heavy. But that's the reason I asked. Should we get into it?
I think we better.
Let's start with
local.
All right. First topic, and I have a show sheet right here.
I've forgotten what these things look like.
I know, topicless. Hello. I figured I better start because
NDSU football was 40 minutes of topics.
Right, exactly. I used to come in and say NDSU football, everything else. But right now, and we do start with NDSU football, it's going to be one of these things that NDSU athletics have become. It's NDSU football season. It's not NDSU football season. Everything else kind of falls into the background a little bit. And we'll get into that a little bit more with my second topic headline. The first one is the recruiting of quarterback Easton Stick, and then this running back who's going to I'm pretty sure he's transferring in from Nebraska, King Frazier. With these guys, the first thing I want to approach with Easton Stick is he tweeted out he's going to be a Bison. He's verbally committed. He's been verbally committed for months. But according to my sources.
You love saying that.
Yes,
you just
I
got
do.
A big smile as you were saying that.
He is due to visit two more schools because of the coaching changes. From what I'm hearing, it's going to be Wyoming and Rutgers. Okay. Now, he's not saying that. Other sources that I know aren't saying that. The ones that are closest telling me that he is going to visit two more schools. Does that worry you a little bit, Brett? Because from what I'm hearing, this guy could be starting as a redshirt freshman, possibly sophomore. He's that good from what they've seen. Does that scare you a little bit that he's going to be visiting Wyoming and Rutgers?
Wyoming, especially.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it has to. If a guy that's verbal to you all of a sudden is going to start visiting a couple more schools, yeah, that has to worry you a little bit.
And he's doing it because of the coaching changes.
Mm-hmm.
So, Wyoming, obvious choice to me why wouldn't you go visit it?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember that, you know, he's verbally committed. That's great and everything. Last year, a linebacker by the name of Pierre G. Tucker, Northern Iowa, went to bed assuming they had him. They woke up and he went to NDSU.
Yep.
You know, you sign, you're not part of the team until you sign that letter of intent. And a verbal, you know, a verbal's a verbal. That's all it is. And if he's going to stick around, he's as good as his word, then good for him. You know, that's fine. But if he wants to go to Wyoming, because there is a chance that he could start very soon there too.
Yeah. And, you know, and every recruit is different in what they're going for. Some people may come on to campus, they may see the NDSU campus, they may see the Fargo Dome and say, I want to be a part of that. And that's why I'm going there, is because of the atmosphere, because of everything that goes with being at NDSU. Some people may say, you know what? I love Craig Bohl, the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator, Brett Vegan. I loved my visit with those guys. I think those are the guys that are going to take care of me, and that's why I'm going to NDSU. And if that's the case for Easton Stick, then I don't have a problem with him taking another look.
If you go to KFGO.com, the Pinto's points, you're going to find a blog that I wrote about Easton Stick visiting a couple other schools. And at the time when I wrote it, I didn't know that Rutgers was still in play. To me, I thought it was going to be the University of Northern Iowa. And the reason being is because there's a former teammate, high school teammate. Stick is from Omaha, Nebraska. He went to high school at Creighton Prep, still does. And there's a Creighton Prep player that plays for the University of Northern Iowa, offensive lineman. So in my head, you start making connections, those two. If they were close or not, who knows? you know, in high school, maybe they still talk. And he's saying, hey, you know, Northern Iowa, you got a shot here. You'd be well within your right to possibly start as a freshman if Cole Morgan kind of stumbles through the gates as he gets older, junior, senior year, so forth, so on and so forth. And so to me, that kind of seemed like the school. But you get FBS offers like Rutgers and Wyoming, why not take a shot?
I think you got to at least explore the options, sure.
And the other thing about King Frazier, this guy, and it hasn't been officially said, but I'm 95% positive he's coming to NDSU. He was a fourth or fifth string running back for the University of Nebraska last year. He's from Missouri. I want to say Lee Summit, and don't quote me on that, but I have to check it out. And he got to see some action in garbage time.
Why don't you check with your sources on
that
on
one? Right, yeah. Well, my sources would be Google.
Oh, okay.
So, but this guy was recruited pretty heavily by Chris Kleiman out of high school.
Yep.
And decided to take a preferred walk-on at Nebraska instead of a scholarship at NDSU. Now it looks like he's going to have an opportunity, again, because of the NCAA rules. You know, NDSU's running back situation isn't as clear-cut as you'd like to assume in the next couple years. Next year, we assume it's going to be Morlock and Crockett. But then after that, who? Morlock and who? NDSU wants to stick with those two-back systems. He comes in, he'll have 3 years. Morlock will have 3 years. Another 1-2 punch. NDSU isn't really a big school on getting recruits in, but Brad, because he's from the University of Nebraska, does that excite you a little bit more when he has that school connotation that comes with his name?
I mean, it gets the fan base a little bit excited, sure. I think his name, I mean, it just sounds like he should be good. Your name is King Frazier. I think, you know, I think you should be good. But, I mean, it raises a couple of eyebrows. But I think more importantly, even than getting the preferred walk-on at Nebraska, because there's a lot of players who get invites to walk on at different places. But more than that is the fact that NDSU thought enough of him coming out of high school that they offered him a scholarship. And the fact that they thought enough, and here's the thing, NDSU, they do a few positions very, very, very well, and what, 11 straight years now with a 1,000-yard rusher? I think the last time they didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher was 2002.
I think you're right.
I mean, it's pretty hard to argue against their...
The results, right?
Yeah, it's hard to argue against their ability to determine what running backs have talent and what doesn't. I mean, their evaluation of running backs has been phenomenal. So, I mean, if they thought enough about him then and think enough about him now to bring him in, then yeah, I mean, you got to be a little bit excited. And, you know, I know you mentioned the name Chase Morlock. There's a running back who redshirted this year whose name is escaping me a little
Jacob
bit.
Jacob Peterson?
Sure, maybe. I don't even remember the name, actually.
Well, here, I'll give you the running back names. There's Peter Santel, who is a walk-on from Fargo North. Crockett, Darius Anderson,
who
had transferred in, but he was eligible to play. Derek Lang.
Yeah, and Derek Lang was a senior.
So was Ojuri.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking for that second guy, and with Frazier being able to come in and play right away, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he takes a whole lot of snaps from Morlock.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either. It's fun. His name is really fun.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
And he could be one of these guys that you fall in love with as far as Bison fans are concerned. Although, Chase Morlock, same thing, too. I mean, hometown boy, one of these guys that, you know, NDSU fans have a soft spot in their hearts for players like him.
Yeah, but NDSU fans really have a soft spot for anybody who can gain another 1,000 yards.
This is true as well. There's no problem there.
Yeah.
And just so people are aware, this isn't because he's failing out of Nebraska or he's had problems. He's fifth on the running back chart, and he just wants to play. Because you look at the charts, he probably wouldn't have seen significant amount of carries until he was a senior.
And sometimes, I mean, and again, and I'm not going to project, but I can see it happen where, you know, you go someplace because, gosh, I can be a running back at Nebraska.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you realize that I'm not ever going to get to play until maybe
right.
my senior year. Well, gosh, the title of, hey, I'm a running back at Nebraska all of a sudden doesn't sound so good because, you know what, I just want to play football.
Right. And go to school,
you know,
go to school for free too.
Yeah,
that's the other part because I don't think he'd ever been offered a scholarship.
Sure,
you know, because he is that far down on the depth chart. And even if you are, I mean, you go to school for free. He's not. I mean, you look at his ACT scores, you look at his GPA coming out of high school; they're good. You know, there's nothing wrong with this kid. He just wants to play football, which, NDSU will gladly accept. The other NDSU...
Did your sources get the GPA ACT score?
Yeah, they're online at Rivals.
Oh,
so that would be my source.
Your sources.
You want to go ahead and do that. You're just jealous because...
I just enjoy the fact that you're actually having sources.
I know. Well, it's cool. I feel big time. Possibility of the pro prospects for these four players. Brock Jensen, Levon Perry, Marcus Williams, Billy Turner. We've talked about Jensen, Williams, and Turner.
I'll ask you. Did your opinion of Jensen change after seeing that he signed with the company, with the trainer, the coach that he did?
No.
No?
It didn't. I don't think he'll get into the NFL. I just think
Does he get a camp invite?
It depends on how everything goes out. His pro day and how well...
That's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you, do you think he's going right now?
No, I don't.
You don't?
Okay. Nope, I don't. Not right now.
Okay.
I think that he'll get a hard look at the CFL.
Okay.
He was on a show here, Three Wine, that Ryan Gellner did on Friday night on KFGO, and he made mention of the fact that the CFL is looking at him pretty hard. And so, to me, that would make sense. CFL, it's a pro career. Why not sign with an agent? If they can get him into the NFL, all right, I'll take it. But if the CFL's there, it's a paycheck. The more surprising thing, I think, Levon Perry, to me, I'm not surprised that he signed with an agent and he's going to work out and try to get to that next level. I'd be kind of surprised if he got a camp invite.
Really?
Would you not be?
I wouldn't be.
Why?
I think he's really good.
Well, obviously
he's been a guy who's been disruptive in the middle of that defense for a number of years. It came back from the knee injury just as good, if not better, than he was before. I think, and you get guys who know how to play and can stop the run and cause a little bit of havoc in the middle. I mean, I think you're at least going to get a look, especially when you're on the far and away number one defense in FCS, and you've got the amount of FBS victories that they have, and the defense was a big part of that. So I think I would be surprised if he made a roster. But then again, I was surprised that Ramon Humber made a roster.
Right.
And he's still playing.
Well, the one thing about Levon Perry is he's fast, but he's not. He either has to bulk up or get skinnier. Because I don't know if he's going to be a defensive tackle at the NFL level.
Yeah, he's going to have to probably, which is just crazy to think because he's a big dude.
He is. 6'4", 282 according to the roster.
Yeah, he's got to get probably in at least another 20.
Yeah, if he wants to be a defensive tackle.
And I don't see him going to the edge.
Well, see, that's the problem then, is if could you get him to be a little bit skinnier and add speed and then teach him outside rushing technique?
That's tough. That's a long road. I think you're better off trying to add a little bulk there, but
yeah.
I could see him. I think he'll get a camp invite.
And that's to me why I don't think he does, because you just don't know what to do with him.
Okay.
Unfortunately, because he is an athlete. Marcus Williams, he's getting, could go as high from what I'm hearing as the third round.
I love that. He could go as high as one of my least favorite sports analyst phrases that's out there.
Why is that?
We could hear about the job status of Andy Dalton as early as today. Thank you. That's almost helpful. I mean,
well, isn't it surprising?
He could go as early as the first round, but he could go as late as not at all.
Well, the reason I bring it up,
you know, I know it's just I'm just saying it's just a commonly used sports phrase that I just think makes
hello,
yeah, just not one that I enjoy. Anyway,
the reason I bring it up is because it seemed like his senior season was a little bit of a downgrade from what he had done as a junior throughout his career. Does it surprise you that he's still projected that high after a senior year like he had? Because it wasn't spectacular. Yeah. It wasn't out of this world.
It doesn't necessarily surprise me, but I certainly wouldn't make that leap. Because here's the thing, and here's the wonderful thing about agents and all this stuff, is you can spin this any way you want to.
Right.
We watched him play literally every single down that he played all year, and we're not impressed with what he did this year. Somebody else can say, well, you know, here's the thing. You get his agent out there and says, how many times was he thrown at? Because that number's really, really small. He was hardly thrown at all, and there's a reason for that. It's because he can cover.
Right.
And teams just did not even look his way anymore.
How healthy was he? How much of 100% was he?
Yeah, he played through injuries, and he still had three interceptions. And look at the body of his career. He's got more interceptions, I believe, than anybody else in FCS, or more pick sixes than anybody else. He's got 21 career interceptions. I mean, this guy can flat out cover, and was the number one corner on a defense that took all these supposedly great passing offenses and shut them down.
Right. For the last several years.
You can spin this however you want to, and if I'm his agent, that's how I'm playing it.
And
you gotta admit that argument sounds relatively believable.
And I think he got an invite to the combine.
Yeah.
So that's huge to go there, because Turner was gonna go. Now Williams is gonna go. So it's huge. I was a little bit surprised by it that he got it high as that grade. I just don't think it's gonna pan out that way unless, of course, you know, he has a good Shrine game is what he's playing in, and then he has a good combine.
If he has a good Shrine game, if he runs the 40 well, and you know, those, I think he'll do well in the combine. He's going to put up those numbers.
Moving on to men's basketball. NDSU went 1-1 over the weekend in the Summit League. They opened the Summit League, lost at Fort Wayne, and then dominated IUPUI. It is what it is. We're not going to get into why they won and why they lost. But what I do want to ask Brad is, what stuck out to you more this week? Or maybe even a better question is, what is the real team for NDSU? What we saw against Fort Wayne or what we saw against IUPUI?
My standard answer to that question is, it's somewhere in between, because 99% of the time that's what it is. I would say it's probably closer to IUPUI, because this team, and this dates back to the... and maybe even not just this team, but teams in general in college basketball, you lose conference games on the road that you shouldn't. And this, and NDSU always has. The Woodside-Winkleman teams would lose a game where you'd think, really?
Well, they lost a game at home that they shouldn't have.
Yeah, but I mean, but they'd lose every year. They'd lose a game or two. I remember talking to Coach Miles about it all the time when I was covering the team for the campus newspaper, and it was always, Coach, what happened on that road trip? This seems really random. And every year, and either the answer is, you know what, you're going to lose some basketball games in conference on the road, because that's just the way basketball works. So I'm not real surprised by that loss. Going out and coming back, bouncing back the way that they did, was great to see against an IUPUI team that's traditionally given the Bison a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, not the last couple games. It's been pretty ugly for IUPUI, but you're right.
But yeah, so I mean, I think the victory is probably a little bit closer to where this team is.
Fort Wayne all of a sudden had a great non-conference year. They lost four of their five games by a combined 12 points in the non-conference. Went 2-0 in the conference to open, or the league, I should say, to open up the season. Fort Wayne is a team to look out for. Omaha is going to be a team a lot better than people think. I think South Dakota is going to be okay. They did beat Denver. South Dakota did. So you have to give them props there. Denver may struggle. I think teams adjusting to a new league, that takes some time. Everything's new. Home and away. Might take some time for them to be good. They're the team that's supposed to challenge NDSU the most. Are you surprised by how well-rounded the Summit League is looking already?
I think not especially. I mean, I think the Summit League was going to be good this year. I mean, you had a lot of young guys last year, and I thought the Summit League would be a better league this year, and it's proven to be so early on. I think we're going to get to see some really, really fun basketball at the BSA this year. I'm really looking forward to seeing. Well, I'll only get to see half of it, which I'm still a little bitter about. I'm working on my master's, and the class this semester is Thursdays at 7.
Oh, no.
So a little, yeah, you get
what's
a little bitter
important?
Shadow
what's
here.
What's more important, Bison basketball or your master's? But let's be honest.
Are you really going to make me answer that question? Because I really don't want to answer that
question.
Don't
answer it, because yeah. I don't know. Does your professor listen to this show?
I don't think so, but I'm still not going to answer that question.
Yeah, it's probably best. Yeah. What point do fans really get behind this NDSU men's basketball team? Because football dominates so much of the attention, and then you have like the football hangover where people are kind of, if the Vikings aren't into the playoffs, they kind of, oh, okay, you know, the playoffs are on, I'll sit around and watch it, but I mean, I don't want to be heavily invested in football right now and take a little break. You know, this team's really good.
Yeah.
You hardly get a page turner when you start writing about them, talking about them, because it's become that kind of thing with NDSU. It's football season. not football season?
You know, this is the type of team that fans really should be behind at this point.
Because, oh, yes, I agree.
Because it's not like it's players that have been sitting on the bench for 2 years are now juniors and seniors and we don't really know them. We've seen these guys play. If you've been to any games, you've seen this same group for 3 years now. And you really, really, it really should have a good following. And I think it will. They're going to draw between 3,000 and 4,000 pretty much every game. They'll hit over 4 when SDSU comes to town. But yeah, I think that football hangover is right. I think there just is a little bit of that. And I mean, I think that's a little bit fair. Part of it, I think, is just honestly, it is the weather. And that may sound a little different, but it's a lot easier to talk yourself into not going to a game when it's 10 below out. And if we get weather like we've had this week, I think you'll see more people say, "Oh yeah, why not? Let's go up and see them. They're good."
There's a lot of factors to me. The BSA is an awful place to go watch a basketball game at because you don't want to sit on those bleachers for longer than 20 minutes. The temperature in there fluctuates so often.
Yeah.
So there's those things, but when you have a team that's this good, and it's not surprising that they're this good. I mean, they beat a really good Notre Dame team. You know, Notre Dame beat Duke.
Yep.
You know, it's Notre Dame is not one of these teams where you go, they're it's an off year.
To be fair, they weren't in Joe Lenardi's most recent bracketology.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Right. Well, again,
just to be fair for the this is a really good Notre Dame team.
It's not a really bad. What I'm saying is, it's not a bad Notre Dame team where you go, oh, okay, Andy's supposed to beat them. It's one of these teams where you go, boy, they're going to pick off some decent teams this year. They've already picked off Duke. Wouldn't be surprised if they picked off a few more teams at home. You may find them on the bubble towards the end of the season.
Yeah,
that could be a possibility.
Could be.
To me, it deserves more attention. It deserves more recognition, and that's why I want to champion talk about this team as much as possible whenever we get the opportunity because I really like basketball, and I really like this team. I really like the coach, and I think this team has an opportunity not only to get into the NCAA tournament, and the Fort Wayne loss hurts, but if they get the right seed, the last seed I saw them had was a 12 seed.
Mm-hmm.
If they get the right seed, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that they can knock a team off. That would be fun, and that's why I think this team deserves your recognition. For those listening out there, just get a chance to go out.
Omaha on Thursday.
That'll be fun. In fact, Marcus in Mayville has a question relating to Bison basketball.
Okay.
He goes, as far as Bison hoops go, if you and NDSU played again the way the Bison have been playing lately, and this was before the Fort Wayne loss, but it was 9-1 since November 24th, how much different would that game go, and did that UND game serve as a wake-up call for NDSU men? That game would go, I think, different because there was a lot of
That game felt a lot like a game where the teams were getting adjusted to the new rules.
Yes.
Is what that game, watching that game, felt like to me, is that they just weren't sure what was going to be called, and it just kind of turned into it turned into a foul/free throw contest and who can make a couple of shots. UND's good. They got a couple of good players. I think overall NDSU's probably a little bit better. But I wouldn't go so far as to say that game was an anomaly, or I don't even know that I guess I'd call it a wake up call, but
I would call it a wake up call.
I would say it was just,
I see, because that UND team, what we look at it, they're good, but you know, NDSU should beat them 9 times out of 10, in my opinion, 8 times out of 10. I think that it served as a wake up call to NDSU going, we're better than this defensively, offensively. We're just better than this, and we can beat a team like UND night in, night out. And we should beat a team like UND night in and night out. It served as a wake-up call, I think, for that team, defensively more so than anything. And I think it served as a wake-up call to the coaches saying, all right, we need to get these kids around to the new rules, and we need to really hammer that home. And maybe it's, you know, games like that, early games like that, maybe served as wake-up calls to refs too, where it goes, all right, let's really kind of lax on the whole hand-checking thing. I know it's a point of emphasis right now, but my gosh, it is ugly. That game was ugly. It was not, I mean, combined 50, 60, 70 free throws, whatever it was. It was an ugly game. I think it was a wake-up call. I think it did help spark their run. and the way they're playing now.
In again, as a general rule, I more perceive wake-up calls as being a fan/media creation more than something that actually happens within a team. You present a decent argument, though. And it pains me to say that. It really does. The refs, I disagree with that. The refs are going to call what they've been told to be called because that's what they have to do.
That's their job.
I think maybe a wake-up call is to, hey, we need to get adjusted to these new rules. I'll maybe buy a little bit of that. I might buy that a little bit.
I'm just going to go there. Like George Costanza would in Seinfeld, I'm just going to leave on a high note because you said I presented a good argument. I'm not going to try and screw that up by talking more. I think somebody told me once, they said, your face, you keep screwing it up by talking. That was always my problem. So
I like that.
We'll move on to
regional.
And we'll start with the Vikings and the fact that they haven't found a head coach. Lovie Smith, your guy, who that'll get put in the ongoing wager. You thought he would be, and I thought Josh McDaniels.
That wasn't an ongoing wager.
It wasn't?
I don't believe so.
Well, maybe I'm fully caught up to the...
I wouldn't have made an ongoing wager because I didn't think he was going to come to the Vikings. I hoped he would. I didn't think he would.
All right. We'll update the ongoing wager towards the end of the show. Anyways, Vikings have yet to find a head coach. Are you worried?
Not really. I mean, they've moved quickly in the past, and how's that turned out?
Brad Childress, Mike Tice.
You know, if they think they've got the right guy and they think they've got somebody who's interested and ready to come and give it a shot, then if they think they've got their guy and it's somebody who's still a coordinator that's coaching at this point, then I don't really have a problem with waiting as long as if you think it's going to give you a better chance of getting the right guy, then take a little bit of time.
You know, some people get this impression that, well, you need a head coach quickly in college football. And that's a lot to do with recruits and getting that stuff in. I just don't think that equals out in the NFL.
I agree.
Take some time. Mm-hmm. You really can. And I think players would respect that more so than anything, saying, hey, we want the right guy that fits this personality, the team's personality. We're not just going to give you some schmuck because of his name. We're going to give you a guy that is legitimately someone we really like, fits with the organization, fits with the team's makeup. I think it's okay. I think there are some fans out there who would agree with us. I think there are some fans out there who would obviously go, ah, boy, they need a head coach so they can figure out who they want to draft and where they want to draft position.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'll say that the NFL has allowed is they've allowed the coaching changes to kind of be drug out a little bit more because the draft got moved a month.
Mm-hmm. So draft is 3 months away. They're going to have time. It's going to be okay.
And that's kind of one of these things that I kind of have to adjust to. I keep thinking it's in April, but it's in May now.
And even if it's in April, I mean... That's you'd still have 3 months to figure out and you know how much. What are you losing? 2 weeks.
2 weeks is a lot of time in sports,
but when
in life in general.
I mean, what would those 2 weeks really gain you with something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you're telling me that most coaches don't take 2 weeks off somewhere in there.
Nick Saban doesn't.
But pro coaches.
Yeah, I suppose you could say golf tournaments and vacations and what have you.
Yeah, so it doesn't. Yeah, doesn't really concern me either way.
Yeah, it doesn't concern me much either. I just, you know,
who do you think they're going to take?
I think Mike Zimmer's the guy that they really like.
Okay,
but I think they're going to do what they said they were going to do: interview a coach at every position. You know, a special teams coach, a quarterback coach, whatever. I think they'll try to get as far as they can in that. I think Mike Zimmer would be a guy that would fit it Minnesota. I also would like to see Daryl Bevel come back. I think he deserves a shot at being a head coach, especially with what he's done with Russell Wilson. Not that Russell Wilson needed a lot to be done with, but that offense fits because they have a guy like, you know, Marshawn Lynch, a powerful running back. Name me one receiver off of Seattle's team.
Golden Tate, Percy Harvin.
That has over 1,000 yards or is a big-time receiver or anything like that.
Tate's got over 1,000 yards. He's their leading receiver.
He does have over 1,000 yards?
I believe so.
We need, like...
We need music.
Elevator
of looking
music,
something
yes.
up. Yeah.
Hang on.
You're going to get there. You're going to get there quicker than I am.
I have a keyboard.
Yeah.
All right. Hang on. Let's check this out. Let's go to there. Golden Tate this year.
Big money. Come on.
898 yards.
Ugh.
And he only had 5 touchdowns. They don't have big-time receivers, is the point, is that they have these guys that are kind of up and coming, but you don't have your...
Sure. You don't have any Calvin
Johnson, stuff like that. And Russell Wilson is 15-0 as a starter because he knows how to run an offense, and it's an offense that fits for him. Can you get a quarterback in that would work with Daryl Bevel's system? That's the question. And that goes down to the draft, but I think he deserves a shot. And he knows Minnesota. He's been there before.
Here would be my concern with that is Daryl Bevel going to come in there and start calling plays? Because that's one of the things that I absolutely hate to see is my head coach calling the plays. I want my head coach and offensive coordinator to be so in sync that the head coach is fine to let the offensive coordinator call the plays, and the head coach can worry about the decisions as far as, do I challenge this? When do we spend our timeouts? Well, I want my coach worrying about those game situation type things, and because that's what he should be doing. That's his job on game day. I don't think he should be calling the plays.
Fair enough.
So that would be my concern.
Who do you want, or who would you like to see?
Honestly,
it doesn't really matter who you want. You're not going to get. You have no choice. But who would you like to see?
That's a good question. And honestly, I don't necessarily know, which is kind of weird with these coaching searches, because usually there's somebody out there who you kind of want. I mean, I mentioned Lovie Smith was the guy I didn't think they would get him. I'd hope they'd get him. But I don't know enough about a lot of the guys. Again, I know that Daryl Bevel calls a great game out in Seattle. Does that mean that he's going to be able to set the tone for an organization? I don't know.
Right.
You just don't know a lot of these guys' personality.
The one thing, and I do a lot of listening to sports talk radio throughout the week, and one thing that was made mention of is that Mike Zimmer, the defensive coordinator for the Bengals, has had a great defense for the last however many years. Three years that they've made the playoffs. But even this year, they were really good. And they did it without one of their top interior linemen in Geno Atkins.
Well, but they're feeding their players steroids like they're Pez, so.
Well, maybe that's what the Vikings need.
Well, okay. You know what? There's an argument to be made there.
There is an argument to be made there. So that would just be my take.
Adderall. It's not steroids, it's Adderall suspensions.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. NBA talk. Timberwolves are 18-18. The Toronto Raptors are better than them. And in fact, last time I checked, they were losing today to the San Antonio Spurs. And
that went final. That's over.
My guess is that they lost.
That would be correct.
Are the Timberwolves going to have to make a move to get more consistent? Because they're not out of the playoff picture yet, but we're almost halfway through the season, and you're not really sure what you're going to get from this team.
Well, I was pretty sure what I was going to get from this team. They were going to be fun to watch, but that they'd be middle of the pack. I'm pretty sure that's what I told you we'd get from this team.
Well, you were right there, Nostradamus, okay. But I'm saying as a team, night in, night out, there is no consistency. And for this team, it was playoffs or bust this season.
Yeah.
And it still is. Not over yet.
Here's the thing. You really have one tradable asset.
Who?
Kevin Love. I mean, that's it, because nobody's going to trade for the person who's shooting the worst. He was so far having the worst shooting season in NBA history in Ricky Rubio. I think the bloom is off of that rose, and I don't know that anyone really wants him
anymore,
at this point.
Right.
Or that you're going to get anything real worthwhile for him.
Can you get rid of some of these
Kevin
bench
Martin's
players?
33 and you just signed him to a 4-year deal. Nobody wants Kevin Martin. Your biggest tradable asset was Derek Williams.
Got rid of him.
And you
for
shipped
peanuts.
him out.
Shabazz Muhammad, is he the savior down in the D League?
I mean, you're not getting anything out of him, but there's not a move to be made with him because you're not going to get anything for him. Shved. I mean, where's your trade? What are you going to get? And there's just nothing to get there.
What I'm hearing is that it's not so much that they should make a trade; it's they can't, and they're stuck with the roster that they have. They're stuck with the hand that they're dealt. And, Flip Saunders can make some moves.
And it wasn't the hand that they were dealt. It's the hand that they drew.
Well,
this is the team that
that's a better way to put it.
This is the team that they wanted to create. And it's a fun team. It's an entertaining team, but it's not going to be a winning team. They're kind of, like I said, there's just not a lot there to be able to move, which honestly, maybe you play the lottery. Let's not go into this.
Whoa.
I mean, you We're not going to go down the Kevin Love
discussion. How do you like that?
You're not going to go into the Kevin Love discussion again because we've had that. But if you want to, in my opinion, if you want to keep him, maybe you just keep the team and you hope you get somebody who's going to be the next big thing in the lottery. Maybe the ping pong balls finally go your way and you get one of those top three guys.
The problem for me is that the Timberwolves would screw it up somehow.
Well,
they've had some of the worst drafts that I can imagine in the last couple of years. Now, again, it's Flip Saunders doing the drafting because he's the GM.
Yep.
And so it's not whoever it was,
Khan,
yes, beforehand. So maybe it's a little bit better for him with Saunders there, but you don't know. It'll be his first draft, I want to say. No, he was part of this draft last year.
Yeah,
as
when they got rid of Trey Burke and...
Oh, who's the other guy? Was it? I know it was Trey Burke for sure, but they had an opportunity at somebody else who I think the other week or the other month were named like rookies of the month for like the conferences.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet they would kill to have Trey Burke right now.
Oh, I would hope so. He would probably be challenging Rubio for a starting job.
They had Burke and somebody else both get named NBA rookies of the month. You're going to look that up for me.
I'm on that.
And then Shabazz Muhammad's being sent down to the D League because they just can't find time for him, or he's not NBA ready.
Maybe if he'd have stuck it through the rookie symposium, he'd be better prepared.
Yeah. Okay. Don't get into me. Just don't start with that. We do have an NBA question coming up in a bit, but first, let's get to where are you? There's Sound Guy.
National.
And we'll start.
He runs away on you sometimes.
He does. Like. I gotta bring him back in. Let's start with BCS title game. Last one. In the current system or the old system, now they'll go to a playoff next year. That's the first question, I guess. Did the BCS go out with a bang, in your opinion? I mean, was this the perfect game to kind of ride off into the sunset with?
It was a fun game. It really was. The end of the game was just a
flurry.
Fourth quarter was incredible. That's the way you want to go out. I mean, that's, you know, for the BCS, I mean, that's not a bad game to go out on. And you end with the team who's the national champion. There's not really any controversy around Florida State's selection as the best team in the country. And I mean, it was that's the way it should have gone. It was fun.
The BCS championship came around in 1998. Was the first season of it. It was the 1999 Fiesta Bowl. Florida State was in that game, and then they were in the one next year when they took on Virginia Tech and won in 2000, I guess. They won the 99 season title, lost the 98 title, and then played in it 3 years straight. And then, of course, they're actually tied for the most appearances by a BCS team with 4-2-2. So, but again, that's just a little tidbit. I like looking up facts.
And I assume that they're tied with Oklahoma?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you.
Look at you. What year was Oklahoma's only national championship?
I'm gonna say 02. I think that's wrong. You got a buzzer there somewhere.
Wrong.
2000. 2000. Anyways, so Florida State national champions over Auburn. More impressed with Jameis Winston in his second half, or Auburn's team play throughout the whole game?
I'm going to go with Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
I think that's the answer. I mean, he did exactly what he needed to do to get that team to win the game. He put an exclamation mark on a Heisman Trophy season.
Right.
There's just no way. It was Jameis Winston's season. It was his year.
The one thing that I really liked about it was a first half where he struggled. He showed what it was like to be a freshman, but then he showed how good of an athlete he really is. Kind of put the team on his back, so to speak, and found some receivers. They dumbed down the offense for him because he's a freshman. They didn't try to get really complicated with anything. It goes, this guy's open. If your first read's open, just go. If it's not, then run with it or try to stay afloat. But otherwise, to me, I have to agree with you. It was Jameis Winston was more impressive than Auburn's team play, although Auburn really all season surprising a lot of people. You know, there was a guy out there, I think Auburn was 101. To win the national title. The guy put, I want to say, $100 on that, or they were 500-1, I should say,
yeah,
and put $100 on that Auburn would win, and was seconds away from winning $50,000. Can you imagine that house? Honey!
Yeah, oh my God.
Put it in the pool!
Yeah.
Their head! What? No! Ah! That cat's a... Think, so the pool.
Think of how upset that we get when we're watching games and our ongoing wager picks go wrong.
Right.
And multiply that times 50,000.
Yes.
Oh, brutal.
Oh, God, I can't.
This is why I don't gamble.
Yeah, no I kidding. Mean, that place house is just, that guy just has to be just tearing his hair out of his head. But, you know, the other way you can look at it is I guess I really never had that money, so I don't lose it. Essentially,
mm-hmm.
You don't feel that you don't feel that way.
Yeah, you go. I tell you what, you drive down to Alabama and you tell that guy. You say, you know what? It's not like you ever actually had that money, so really, it's okay. And see how quickly you go unconscious.
Right. Exactly. No, it's all right, dude. You never had that money.
Yeah.
NFL. We got to get into that playoffs time. We surprised by the teams in the conference title game. Is anybody surprised by these four?
I mean, I'm only surprised in the fact that this never happens. These are, you're not going to get a lot of argument. I'm going to sound like Dan Dierdorf here in honor of Dan Dierdorf's last game. You're not going to get, find the argument that these aren't the best teams in the best four teams in the conference.
That's your only argument?
It's the only argument I need, Sean!
I mean, they are. They were the best four teams that we thought coming in, the best two teams in each conference. And it rarely works out that you get those four teams in the conference championship games. I think next Sunday is going to be an awesome, awesome day of football, and I'm really excited to watch these two games.
It's going to be fun. The Manning-Brady Bowl, of course, for possibly the last time, but you never know. Manning keeps coming back from the dead, it seems like, and Brady with a duct-taped team, essentially put together with glue, mud, clay, whatever you could find in the closet, and they won 12 games, 12-4, dominated the Colts, really. Which I have a problem in that game. I'm going to go back to this. It's a 4th-and-4 in the early on fourth quarter, or 4th-and-5. Early on fourth quarter, maybe 10 minutes to go, and the Colts are down 21. You have to score on every possession from here on out to have a shot. 4th-and-4, 4th-and-8, maybe they punted.
Yeah.
They gave up.
That was kind of a white flag.
That was, to me, I didn't like that. I wanted them to go for it because you got to say, look, I mean, we're down 21. We're down 3 scores. We have to score on every possession because statistics say we're only going to get 3 more possessions, essentially. And we'd have to fight for those 3 possessions. It mathematically, if you did the math on it, whatever, it'd probably go down to more like 2 because time possession, and so forth. But you got to go for it in that situation. I didn't like that, but the better team won in that game.
And I'm
not surprised either. To answer my own question, I'm not surprised by the team's conference title game.
And You have to be excited for Manning versus Brady with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line again. This is one, and sports fans have the attention span of a flea where it's, oh my gosh, I've seen this already.
Right.
It doesn't seem like people get bored of this matchup.
No, I don't think so either.
And with the Super Bowl trip on the line, it's going to be a blast.
It'll be fun. I'm more looking forward to Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick.
Because
they're good friends.
Yeah. How many personal fouls get called in this game?
Because these two teams chatter. Holy cow.
And I don't know, did you watch the 49ers-Panthers game today?
I did not watch any of it.
Oh, my goodness. They were...
Oh, no, I watched the first couple minutes, but otherwise I was doing some other stuff.
They were yapping from the first... Oh, the opening kickoff through the closing buzzer. It was... I mean, there were personal fouls called. There was headbutting. There was, I mean, a little bit of everything in there. One guy got he didn't get thrown out because he didn't connect, but he kind of took a swing at one of the 49ers players.
Jeepers.
I mean, these teams were, and I saw Matthew Berry from ESPN tweeted this out, said, you know, I'm happy the 49ers won, but gosh, it's hard to like them. I mean, and I thought that was just a really good tweet if you don't have a dog in the fight with these teams. And again, for the third time that they'll be playing this year, the referees are going to have, I hope they have Hockley on that game to try to keep some order.
It's going
to
be tough, but you would hope that veterans would step up and go, hey, look, you know, let's not forget who we are.
Here's the thing, though. I think this is who they are, and that's what I mean.
But then, are you going to lose sight? Are you going to lose concentration? I mean, this isn't, you know,
to this point by being like that.
That's true. It just does it take away from the game? I think is going to be the overall question at the end of it. If these two teams start yapping at each other and throwing punches, and it ends up being a great game, but all I remember is there was three personal fouls and there was a lot of.
I mean, I don't think that's all we remember, because what games do you ever remember that from?
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
even the games that are like that, you don't really ever remember that. But I think as you're watching it, you're going to be, I mean, there's going to be pushing and shoving after all sorts of plays. And it'll be interesting to see how quickly the referees start chucking flags to try to get control of this game.
Who wins that one, San Francisco, Seattle? I know who I have.
I mean, you have San Francisco, yes, because you had them at the beginning of the season.
Going to the Super Bowl.
These teams are dead even. In my mind, these are the two most evenly matched teams left. And I might even say that these are the two best teams that are left. I think these are the two most complete teams that are left.
What pushes the other one forward over the hump to get into the Super Bowl then? What is it that you're looking for if they're so evenly matched?
And I'm gonna tell you I'll give you the storylines for the week that you're gonna hear on Around the Horn PTI. If you watch any of ESPN's other shows, you're gonna hear, the experience that the 49ers have. It's their third straight NFC championship game. Kaepernick has been there and done that. He knows how to win these big games, and it's going to be San Francisco because they've got that. Seattle, man, it's the 12th man. Marshawn Lynch has come so far. The maturity of Russell Wilson as a second-year quarterback is beyond his years, and they've got the best home field advantage. It gets so loud. It caused an earthquake this last week on that Marshawn Lynch touchdown run. Those are going to be your arguments, and then you're going to take your favorite from there. If you're going to make me make a pick, I'm probably going to take Seattle, but I don't feel good about that at all.
Okay, and just because they're at home, or
I partially that, and I think that at this point of the playoffs, the flags start to stay in the pocket a little bit more, and I think that benefits the secondary of Seattle.
I think it does. Great point, because my thing for San Francisco being better winning this game is because the receivers. Mm-hmm. Are better. They have a better receiving core. The running back, I think, as a quarterback, Russell Wilson's better. Marshawn Lynch is a better running back.
But it's not a huge advantage on either of those two.
No,
areas.
It's not. I think the secondary is better for Seattle. I think the linebackers are better for the Niners.
For San Francisco, yeah.
So there's a lot of these questions, but it's that receiving core where I look at and go, boy, Anquan Boldin had a huge game today. Vernon Davis, Michael Crabtree. It's just, yep. There's a lot of people for San Francisco. I go, yeah. That's why I like him. Denver, New England. Yeah. Who do you think?
This is the game that's going to define Peyton Manning's legacy. If he wants to have a chance to go down as the best quarterback of all time, he has to win this game right here.
That's another storyline that will come up, yes, which is garbage.
I love playing generic ESPN guy. I may make this. I need to come up with a voice for him, and I need to make this a character on the podcast.
I think it's
forward.
Actually a bit that we just came up with. Yeah. We have to figure out what generic ESPN guy is going to come up with the storyline, and then we're going to have to figure out if you hit on any of them.
You know, I tell you what, when you look at these two quarterbacks and what they've done, it's going to be a wash. It's a wash between these two guys with the way that Peyton Manning has broken records this year. I think I'm turning into Jaworski. I think that might be my Jaws right there. Denver, just their offense, he's had so many weapons, maybe more weapons than he's had at any point in his career. But Tom Brady, man, they just keep winning. And Bill Belichick is the best coach to ever coach in the National Football League. And that's why I have to give the edge to the Patriots. I'm picking Denver, by the way. But that's what he would go with. I think those are going to be the storylines. And again, this Patriots team, you got this Denver team, but this blue-collar Patriots team, you mentioned duct tape together. Just a great full team. And that's how they play the game.
You done? Can I get the white shadow back here?
Can I finish? Can I finish? Okay, I'm finished.
I don't even know where to go from there. I'd like to see Denver win. Obviously, no dog in the race, horse in the race, any kind of animal that races in the race. I think Denver wins. Now, midweek, we're going to get a weather report more accurately to what it's going to be, and it's probably going to be cold, windy, and wet, and then it's going to be, then it's going to be New England. Or no, it's in Denver.
It's in Denver.
Well, yeah. It still could be cold, windy, and wet, but today was cold and windy. I mean, it was 35 degrees with wind gusts up to 35 miles per hour. We know what that's like.
Yeah. So. Here's the thing. I, I'm I've been a Peyton Manning fan for over a decade. I love Peyton Manning. I'm hoping Denver wins because I don't want, I want to someday be able to make the argument that I think Peyton Manning is the greatest quarterback of all time.
I don't think it'll be one that can be refuted at the end of his career. I truly don't.
If he has one Super Bowl, I think it can.
One Super Bowl.
And his playoff record is an issue. Because it's not like he drug teams. It's not like he drug teams to the playoffs and then they lost to better teams. He got upset a lot in the playoffs, and that's an issue. You gotta, I think you gotta have multiple Super Bowls. And agree or disagree with, you know, how much we value championships for single players, you gotta have at least multiple championships, because you can make an argument for John Elway and not feel ridiculous about making that argument. You can't make that argument about Brett Favre because he's got one Super Bowl.
The one thing that I feel with Peyton Manning is, you know, Tom Brady has three Super Bowl rings, but how many of those teams that Tom Brady was on were just all around better? And Peyton Manning had teams that he went, all right, I'm just going to have to get this team to 13, 12, 11 wins, and let's hope we don't run into the team that is better than us.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's how I look at it, more so than he got upset a lot in the playoffs. Well, yeah, but again, you have to look at who they were facing, A, and B, what kind of teams he actually was on.
Yeah.
That's why, to me, I've...
But again, he was the favorite and at home in a lot of those playoff games, and that hurts. When you're 13-3 and, you know, 12-4 and 14-2 every single year, and you keep losing at home, that's...
Well, to me, with Tom Brady, even this is more of a legacy-defining playoff run than it is for Manning, because...
Oh, I disagree wholeheartedly.
Well, here's how I'll put it. If Tom Brady won him early in his career, and he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback, there's no disputing that in my mind. But when I look at it and go, how good of a quarterback was he, and if he wins with this team? Because this team is not good. It's good because Brady's there.
Yeah.
No Gronkowski, no Hernandez. You don't have the regular running or wideouts you'd like to. Danny Amendola has been hurt pretty much on and off all season long.
Yep.
You've lost... I don't know how many defensive players. They're just, again, duct taped together. Tom Brady's able to take this team to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. To me, it's kind of like when Kobe won the NBA championship without Shaq, without anybody else besides Side. It was just him. I think Tom Brady
and
can look
Paul
at this.
Paul Gasol, you mean?
Well,
other
I mean,
than a okay.
Hall of Fame type player by his side. Because
Paul
how many?
Paul Gasol's a Hall of Famer. We're going down a different path
here.
Yes,
okay.
Here, but,
and that would be an argument that I'd want to dispute, but I'd have to look at the stats. It doesn't matter because we just went off on a tangent. My head is just wanted, like, it's spinning right now because you just said Paul Gasol is a Hall of Famer. Where was I going with this now? Oh, the roster that Brady's on now. How many Hall of Famers are on this roster outside of him?
Yep.
How many
Belichick?
How many Hall of Famers are probably on the roster that he won Super Bowls with? Rodney Harrison's got to be up there. Adam Vinatieri, even as a kicker, but he was an important kicker. The offensive line he had, there might be a couple guys that you can look at. I own great offensive linemen.
I mean, I don't know that Teddy Bruschi is a...
I don't think he played long enough.
You know, I don't
Mike
think
Vrabel,
he is.
But
those are your guys.
Right. Again, better teams. And so to me, you look at it and go, okay, that makes sense.
But and Peyton Manning, if you want to go off
Marvin
of that argument,
Harrison,
Reggie Wayne... is going to be up
Reggie
there.
Reggie Wayne will be in there.
But again, that's more than what you've got. You know, Marvin Harrison's a surefire guy.
And I think defensively, though, is where I...
Yeah, oh yeah, the Patriots were better defensively.
Right.
And but here's the thing. I think if Brady wins a Super Bowl this year, and what would this do for their legacies? I think Brady has a real shot at being able to eclipse Montana.
Yeah.
Because I think... Your standard answer, the answer you can't go wrong with right now for the greatest quarterback of all time is Montana.
And I would argue that because I don't define greatness by the number of Super Bowls you won. It helps.
Yep.
But I want to look at, I think Dan Marino was the greatest quarterback of all time. Based on what you're supposed to do at the position.
But the position is based on winning. That's part of the problem with being a quarterback. That's a big part of it is doing what it takes to win games. And I mean, Marino even just, he only made it to one.
But here's the part for me is that it's a team victory. Stats is how I look at it, and that's an individual thing. That's what makes you great. But you don't win Super Bowls based off of just who you are. You win Super Bowls based off the fact that, heck, my defense gave me some huge stops there, and my special teams was unbelievable. And my running game was spectacular.
Yeah, I think your argument is Marino is the best quarterback of all time. I mean, you can't even make the stats argument with him. Favre took all his stats.
Yeah, but
and Favre has a Super Bowl.
Yes, this is true. And again, the game evolves as we go on. But I think that, you know, when
but
you
Favre
look,
never really played in.
He played in a more wide open. He played in a much more wide open
not
type of league than Dan Marino. Dan Marino did a lot of his damage in the 80s.
Yeah.
Early 90s, maybe, but more so in the 80s when it was still, you can do what you want in the secondary for the most part.
Yeah, but Favre played in a chunk of that as well.
A little bit, I mean, but not a lot. They were starting to get much more
protective. They weren't getting to the video game numbers. Favre is probably the reason for a lot of that.
Yes.
And, I mean, which is maybe an underrated part of his legacy, is after the way he got knocked around in that New Orleans game between him and Brady getting when he got his knee blown out.
Right.
I mean, those two guys are probably a big part of the reason for the rules now. But was it different? Yes. I don't think it was so different, though, like what it is now when I'm trying to remember. I think of the 10 greatest single-season passing seasons yards-wise, I believe 8 of them have happened in the last 3 or 4 years. Yeah, and we can Google that, but I'm relatively confident that I heard that stat. So I would argue a little bit with that, but I think the Marino argument's really a hard one to make. Because as a quarterback, you've got to win games.
The last 10, actually 10 of the 9 of the last 10 have been done in the last 3 years.
Okay. So, yeah, it was even more than I thought.
Dan Marino in 1984 threw for 5,084 yards, 6th on that list. Breeze
has got to be up there, what, 4 times?
Breeze is in there 4 times, yep. He's 2, 4, 5, and 7.
Yep.
Stafford's in there twice. Eli Manning in 2011 had a great year. But Peyton Manning this year, most yards in a season.
So Favre was before the, if you want to call this the live ball era, Favre was still a little bit before that. But were you just being silly when you think Dan Marino is the best quarterback of all time, or do you actually believe that?
I do, because I think he,
okay.
I think he moved forward what we see now as it being the era of the quarterback. He was the start. He is what you looked at and went, boy, if we could get a quarterback like Dan Marino. This team, I mean,
he wasn't even the best quarterback in his own draft class. Elway was better than he was.
Just because he won Super Bowls?
I mean, I think that's a part of it.
I'm not.
But that's, again, if you judge quarterbacks differently, so this is going to be an argument that's just going to go around in circles.
Right.
Well, no, I can win because you're wrong. But I mean.
I'm not wrong.
I think Marino is very underrated. I think he's very underrated historically, and I think he gets passed over when you bring up the list of greatest quarterbacks all time. You go Montana, you go Elway, you go Brady, you go Manning, and I think those are the four that you start with.
Okay, so
I think he gets left out.
So if we go by the fact that winning is a major part of it, why is Troy Aikman not considered? Three-time Super Bowl winner.
I think you got to have both. And I think if you're going to talk in the greatest quarterbacks of all time, you got to have both. And Troy, you look at Troy's numbers, you wouldn't believe how low his numbers are.
I would. You know why? He had a good team.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, that is what hurts Troy. But Troy, I'm sure if you asked Troy if he can remember any of those Super Bowls with all the concussions that he's had, he'd be fine with it because, you know what, I got the rings and I really don't care.
Speaking of Joe Montana, the best season he ever had, stat-wise, as I rifle through this thing quick,
yep,
was in 1990, threw for 3,944 yards.
Okay, and that's yards. I mean, you know, touchdowns have got to be up there as well. But again, you know, yes, it was, and that's why in my mind, I really hope to be able to make the argument that Peyton Manning is number one. But I think you got to have 2 Super Bowls to be able to make that claim.
He only threw 26 touchdowns, was 3rd in the league in that, behind Cunningham and Moon. I get where you're coming from. I do, but again, to me, it's 2 different things. obviously, you equate wins way more with quarterbacks, and I think that sometimes quarterbacks deserve the wins to be given to them, and other times it's a team victory. You win despite your quarterback, or you win, yeah, the quarterback had a decent game, but the fact was your running game worked well, your special teams worked well, and your defense worked well.
But if you don't have one, my guess is if you ask Marino, hey, well, you can trade in that 5,000-yard season for a Super Bowl. You can. I'm going to shave 30,000 yards off of your career numbers.
Right.
But I'm going to give you a Super Bowl.
But that's not the question. The question is, who is the greatest quarterback of all time?
Doesn't that say something about the value of it?
Of whether, I don't think Marino would care if he's the greatest quarterback of all time or not. But to me, and we're not trying to argue value of the stats or the yards or anything like that, but that's
no,
how
that's,
I...
But that's kind of why I'm valuing.
But that's how I look. Well, he values that it that way.
But that, doesn't that say something?
No, not to me. It doesn't value... It doesn't say something to me about how great the quarterback is because he traded stats for Super Bowl rings. Anybody would do that. To me, the greatness of a quarterback depends on the fact of... How many yards did you throw for? How many touchdowns did you throw for?
Well, in that case, I mean, Drew Brees has got four of the top seven single seasons of all time.
And he's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, in my opinion. But because Dan Marino changed to me, or at least put forward the fact that a throwing quarterback is the future. That's what makes it great, because this is the greatest era for quarterbacks in the NFL history.
Comment on the page here. Send us an email, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com.
Tweet us
at the Bison Guy, at PintoKFGO, and let's see if we can find one person out there other than Pinto who thinks Dan Marino is the greatest quarterback of all time. I'll give you maybe the greatest hair on a quarterback of all time. I'll maybe give you that, but that's probably about as far as I'm willing to go.
That's a fair argument. So... Looking forward past the NFL playoffs, which will be a lot of fun next week. Can't wait. NBA question for you, and then we have a Major League Baseball question. NBA question is, I'm going to give you six teams.
Okay.
Three from each conference. These three, and I looked it up, they're not in the playoffs if the playoffs were to start today, but they're on the cusp. Pick one that you could see conceivably making the playoffs. Knicks, Celtics, or Bobcats in the East?
I guess I have to say the Knicks. I don't feel good about it, but...
I think they're the ninth, and they're about a couple games out.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics, I think, are really... The Celtics really don't want to win yet. I mean,
No.
The Celtics do not want to win. And, you know, when the columns that are being written about your team when you start winning are, what are they doing? This is not part of the plan. We need to lose games to get better. I don't know about that. The Knicks at least... The Knicks at least have a guy that can get
Mello.
They got Mello, and if and when Tyson Chandler comes back, they'll be better. I think they'll be good enough to get destroyed in the first round.
Who's the number four team in the East Conference right now? The playoffs start today.
Is it still your crappy Raptors?
Boom shakalaka!
Yeah. It's not my crappy Raptors. They're 18-17.
No, that's pretty crappy.
They're 7-3 in their last 10. They're the third hottest team, in the Eastern Conference.
In the crappy Eastern Conference.
Actually, they're like one of the hottest teams in the NBA.
Okay.
Boom, shakalaka!
Yeah, okay. Keep hitting that button to make yourself feel good. Keep hitting that button and hope Vince Carter comes back.
Love me some VC. Vinsanity. Western Conference. Nuggets, Timberwolves, Grizzlies.
Grizzlies.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you where they're at right now.
Yeah.
They're four games out currently. Now, it's only halfway through the season, but an 11.5 games back, 17-19.
As the season goes on and games start getting uglier, that's their kind of game. Getting into those, you know, getting into teams that are a little bit worn down and then just pounding them.
Yeah.
That's their game. So the Nuggets are in a state of transition. We've talked a little bit about the Wolves. And the Grizzlies, I mean, they're not that far away from being in the Western Conference Finals and really haven't turned over their roster that much. They've got three legitimate guys on their team right off the top of your head when you're looking at Conley, Randolph, and Marc Gasol. So I'm going to go with the Grizzlies.
I would go with the Knicks in the Eastern Conference, yes. I would go with the Nuggets in the Western just because they've been there before. They're kind of a veteran squad. And they know how to pace themselves, which would be a way to put that, I suppose. But
the argument for the Nuggets, I think, is more so just their home court advantage.
Yeah.
They've always had a great home court advantage. But doesn't it speak to the value of the head coaches with those two teams?
Oh, it does.
Losing
completely.
Lionel Hollins for the Grizzlies and George Karl with the Nuggets.
Right.
I mean, there's
something to be said there. You're right.
I think the head coach in the NBA is often
overlooked.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, rightfully so. But you know, maybe this shines a little bit of light upon, hey, the Grizzlies are almost the exact same team. They made the Rudy Gay trade and got better after getting rid of Rudy Gay. The only thing that changes is they lose their head coach and. They're worse.
I think that the NBA is one of those places where we devalue or undervalue would be a better way to put it, the head coach, because if he gets the right players with what he wants to do, he can make magic happen.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
Jeff Hornacek's doing a heck of a job there. Love me some Jeff Hornacek.
He was great with those Jazz teams.
Yes, he was.
And a great video game player as
yes,
well.
Yes, he was.
Love Jeff
Loved
Hornacek.
Loved him on some NBA Jam.
Yeah.
Hang on, wait
and
for
not
it.
Even
wait
a,
for
okay.
it.
Oh my, he's on fire.
See, I would argue better on NBA Live.
Oh, he was good
you,
on
you
that
put,
too.
You put him on that, just start casting threes. Oh. Gosh, we're reliving our youth today.
Oh man, I used to stay up so many nights playing NBA Live 95 on Sega.
Nice.
With the Orlando Magic, Nick Anderson and
okay.
Horace Grant and Shaq. In Anthony Hardaway.
Penny. I was live not either 98 or 99 on Super Nintendo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, video games. I need to get a video game dropping here. Last question I have for you as we move on from this. The Major League Baseball Hall of Fame vote came out. Frank Thomas, Greg Maddux, and Tom Glavine were the inductees. But the biggest news that came out of it was Dan Le Batard gave up his Hall of Fame vote to the website Deadspin.
Yes.
And got eviscerated and essentially got banned from Baseball Writers of America Association. They took away his Hall of Fame vote and they took away his media credentials for
a year. Year for the membership, lifetime for the Hall of Fame vote.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so to me, he gave this up because he wanted to prove that the voting system was in shambles and it wasn't correct because he wants these steroid era guys, Barry Bonds, Mike Piazza, people like that, to get more of a attention. Not that Piazza ever used or it's ever been proven, but he's thrown in there.
Yeah.
That's his whole point. And I guess the question from me, no. We'll do it this way because you had a great question before we started recording the show. Ask your question that you asked of me and you can't remember it, can you?
What gave it away? The completely blank look on my face? Was that it?
You asked me, what about it did you not like?
Okay.
When it was
Dan, what about Dan Le Batard giving up his vote to Deadspin did you have a problem with?
I had a problem with the fact that, and now I can't remember what my answer was. I have to formulate this opinion quickly in my
90?
Mind.
Are we 90? What's happening here?
I don't know. We just need to.
Forgive me. I'm blowing your mind.
I'm not really. The fact that he's trying to get in these steroid era using guys and.
Okay, now.
His whole issue is, you know, we're really looking at this wrong and we're really not going at this right. Okay, I understand that. But why not, instead of giving up your vote, say, look, here's what we need to do. We need to reduce this. Instead of use your voice and just go out and get on. You're an ESPN guy.
Sure.
You have a show. You have a column. You have whatever. You have the world at your fingertips, essentially. Get on there and go, look. There's too many old guys in this that don't care about baseball anymore. We have 600 or 400 or whatever it is people voting. Jock Jones and Armito Benitez got...
Armando Benitez.
Armando.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. They got votes for the Hall of Fame. Get rid of those guys. I mean...
Okay.
And that's what I do like about it is that he gave it up to Deadspin because they allowed the fans...
So you like being able to do that.
I like that he did that. I don't like the fact that... He went about it in the wrong way.
Okay.
Which is very contradictory. I like that he did it, but he did it wrong.
Okay. Here's the thing. And now, do you like Dan Le Batard? Because that can
no.
frame you don't? Okay.
No.
See, I like Dan Le Batard. I think agree or disagree, he comes off as a blowhard, But if you listen to him, he actually puts thought into what he says and what he does. And I appreciate that. Even if I disagree with you, if you're at least not just screaming for the point of screaming and you actually put a little bit of time and effort into your points, then I'll have a little bit of respect for you. And I think he does that. And he was on with Dan Patrick last week. And that was kind of the point that Dan Patrick said the exact same thing that you did. You've got a national radio show. You have a TV show. You've been a columnist for the Miami Herald for how many years?
Right.
You have all of these platforms. Why aren't you using those? And Le Batard said, I have been using those for the better part of the last 10 years. What has gotten more attention drawn to this issue than what I just did? And that's a really hard point to refute, because nothing blew up all of these things and magnified these issues more than what he did.
Right.
And this is something that I think a lot of people lose sight of, that I haven't heard anywhere, that I think is really interesting, because it just speaks to the pompousness of these baseball writers, because college football gives a Heisman vote to Nissan. And lets the fans get to have an official
right.
Heisman vote because Nissan basically bought one.
Right.
But Dan Le Batard gives one to, you know, and Deadspin's kind of seen as the redheaded stepchild of
which
the media.
Which they're not, if you actually...
I know, but that's how they're seen to these guys. I know you're getting excited whenever I mention anything even slightly negative about Deadspin. Calm down.
I love Deadspin.
I know you do. But that's how they're seen. And then all of a sudden, this is an awful, terrible, horrible thing. And... here's the thing. Should Dan Le Batard really have a vote for the Hall of Fame? And this is coming from a guy who likes Le Batard. When's the last time Dan Le Batard covered the Miami Marlins?
Right. No, you're right. I don't think he should, and I don't think a lot of people should.
How does Bob Costas not have a Hall of Fame vote?
Right.
Jonah Carey, one of the smartest baseball writers that's out there, he won't have a Hall of Fame vote for 9 more years.
Right, because he just joined.
Because he just joined, and you have to have you have to be in the baseball writers, I don't know, cult of America for 10 years before you can get a Hall
right.
of Fame vote. It shines some light on the process and that it is flawed. And when you come in, well, you have all these things. Like, what's gotten me more attention what's brought more attention to the issues than this? Because the biggest argument right now, and what's worse, Dan Le Batard giving his vote to Deadspin, or the guy who deserves more to lose their vote, Le Batard, or the guys who vote for Jock Jones or Armando Benitez or JT Snow?
Those guys, to me.
Yes. There's a certain point where, yeah, it's your opinion, but there are times where your opinion can be wrong. I'm sorry.
But you're right. And I don't understand why you do it. Is it just because, hey, Jock, you know, you're a good friend of mine, I'm throwing a vote? And
probably,
so
you know who it probably was? It was probably one of the guys who works for either the Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press of that. And they said, you know what, let me throw you a bone here, Jock. Let's at least get you so you don't put up a biscuit on the vote.
Or he just didn't want to vote for anybody else, like a Barry Bonds or whoever else was on the ballot, and said, I'm going to write in Jock Jones.
And here's Le Batard's point with that, because I think that's getting misconstrued a little bit as well. His point isn't that we should put every one of these guys in. His point is, you know what, there's a difference between Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa. Sammy Sosa was an average player who all of a sudden hit 60 home runs in 4 years.
Right.
Barry Bonds was a great player, and it's not that we should not let he disagrees with the it's either they're all in or none of them in. Why can't we differentiate between them? That's his argument, which is a point that it's not a popular point of view, but that's kind of his point of view on that. So I think that, you know, that point of view gets looked at a little differently.
It just seems that these guys who put Hall of Fame people in think the way it was back in 19-whatever is
yes.
the way it should always
yes.
be.
And that's another thing he said. We've been doing this the same since it started. Tell me something else that's successful that doesn't change over the course of 60, 70 years.
And reality is, the whole we can't give somebody 100% of the vote... Is,
oh my gosh!
Is BS because
Greg Maddux and
Tom Glavine, you find me better at this point in this era, anyways, especially at this era,
yeah.
find me two better
and especially,
guys
especially to get Maddox, 100% because I think there's a little difference between Glavine and Maddox. They're both obviously Hall of Famers, but that's one thing. What's worse, voting for Jock Jones or not voting for Greg Maddox? If you don't think Greg Maddox is a Hall of Famer, then and, you should lose your vote.
And if you asked every single one of the guys who voted, they'd say, yeah, well, yeah, I think Maddox is a Hall of Famer. Well, of course you do, but you can't because it's not part of
because,
world tradition.
Oh, my gosh, Babe Ruth never got unanimous,
right.
So we
so
can't give it to
Greg
anybody.
Maddox could?
I'm not going to vote for anybody on the first ballot. No, you should lose your vote.
You should. Simple as that. And I think that the fans should have a call in it.
I don't mind that.
And that's why I liked Deadspin doing it, because they put out everybody and said, why not this guy or why not that guy? I mean, it was
if the fans have 1/450th of the vote, yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, who cares? And they frankly, you get enough people, you pull enough people, they're gonna come to the agreement that yeah, Jeff Bagwell was really good, or oh yeah, Craig Biggio was really good, and Frank Thomas was really good. And
okay, so let's
they're
look
not going to come
now.
Up with the Jock Jones of the
okay,
world.
Yeah.
Which bothers me more than Barry Bonds getting reduced. That's the other thing. The whole steroid era, that's still a cloud to me. So I get why you don't want to vote for him.
Yeah,
and there's arguments out there, but well, you know, but to me, it's not about you were great before you used steroids. It's the fact it was you used steroids.
I agree.
It's black and white to me in that instance. And so because you did that, done. You cheated.
Yeah.
You cheated at the game to get better. That to me does not equal Hall of Fame status.
Okay. And that's and we're going down, and this is again different path, but this isn't a bad path to go down while this is, you know, going on. It's hard for me to basically say, you know what, this whole 10-year period of baseball, we're just going to pretend like it doesn't exist. There's a Family Guy episode where trust me, this works, where Stewie and Brian go over to Germany and they're taking this tour.
I've seen it, yeah.
And they're looking through and Brian's saying, talking to the tour guide on this bus, saying, how come there's nothing in here about what happened between 1941 and 1945? And the tour guide's, whoop, nothing happened. It was fine.
We were out to lunch.
Yeah, we were out to lunch. Well, you invaded Poland. Nope, they invited us. Tea was served. You know, you can't just ignore that these years happened in your game, whether you're proud of them or not.
Well, you're not ignoring them, essentially, but you're going, I don't respect the way you treated the game, in my opinion, which I agree with. You don't give someone you don't give someone the chance.
But
the reason they cheated, they accomplished what they set out to do when they cheated. Money. Overall goal, money, because what fame?
I think
money,
that was. I think money was the Players Association's end game with it. Yes.
Well, that, but even the players too, because Barry Bonds, a lot of money, a lot of attention.
To a certain extent.
Ryan Braun.
I think
a lot of money, a lot of attention, and so to me, it's not about the fact
Barry
that,
Bonds. I disagree. I think his was less money. I think his was he was.
Well, Barry Bonds is a very guy that he's very arrogant and wanted to
and
be
he
look
was,
at me.
Well, he was upset that because he looked at McGuire and Sosa when they were going on their saving baseball run and saying, man, I'm better than those guys. And guess what? He's right.
Well, he is.
Because he's better than those guys.
Then why then?
Because he was, because he's, I'm not even seen as one of the best players in the game because these guys are roiding up. If I roid up, I'm going to do exactly what he did.
Currently. They didn't see him as currently, but.
And. The part that I have a problem with this is not that the players went behind the backs. I mean, everybody outside of the media knew.
No, the media knew too. They just didn't know how to go about it because you get to the point where you're so buddy-buddy with people and you understand what's going on that you go, oh, well.
Well, then, okay. But then that's fine. So you're going to, so you know this is going on if you're a media member. If you're one of these guys that's voting for the Hall of Fame, but now these guys come up, it's, oh, my gosh. I can't, this, the outrage. And now I'm going to not vote him in. I think that's
because,
really kind
of... Because you don't want to be the guy. A majority of these people aren't Dan Le Batard types that are going to be the guy that goes, I want to get these people in because I think they were Hall of Famers. This guy, and this guy. A lot of them don't want to be the dude that said, oh, okay, I'm going to put Barry Bonds in. And then it have it come out definitively that, yeah, I took roids for like 10 years and you guys had no idea. You don't want to be the guy that votes for Jameis Winston and then all of a sudden he gets charged with sexual assault. You don't want to be the guy that's pinned with that. That's why these writers go, maybe
but,
they don't.
But by
go that
your
they,
argument, if the writers knew what was going on,
I think a majority of them did.
Didn't write about it, but then want to act all high and mighty and say, well, I knew you were doing this, but And but I now think, I'm not going to vote you into the Hall of Fame, even though I knew you were doing this as I go
know.
Along, and now I'm going to have the outrage instead of writing this story 10 years ago. Big problem.
And I'll
that.
Put it like this. I don't know if they knew they were doing steroids, but they probably knew that they were doing something. Whether they knew it was illegal or not, these guys don't look at the list of what is and what isn't banned as writers. They don't sit there with a book and go, oh, yeah, Android, that's banned. I'm pretty sure that's what Mark McGuire is taking. Or this is banned. Or that's,
that was written about. But Andrew Steen Dion was written about
in
with 19, McGuire.
In 1998.
Yes, it was in his locker.
Yes, but was it illegal in 1998?
Was it against Major League Baseball rules, or was it actually illegal in the country?
No, it was legal in the country. It wasn't against rules because they hadn't gotten to that point yet.
Okay, so then why? So then you're going to hold that against him?
No, I'm not going to hold that against him. Mark McGuire had good seasons. He wasn't a great career player. If you look at...
He's got 500 and some home runs. That's a magic number.
How much of that was done juiced?
But you're arguing that this was legal. I think he was doing way more than Andro.
At the point,
but
what I'm saying is that these baseball writers that we're arguing about, what they do and do not know what is illegal, that's the question.
Isn't that their jobs?
Not with drugs.
Yes, if it's about these baseball players and they know they're doing something,
but
that's absolutely their job.
But you have to understand the list of this stuff, and they're not going to go... When you're a beat writer, which probably a majority of these are, were, whatever, your daily job is to write about the team, and I get where you're going to come at me with the argument, but you don't look in the locker... You don't look in a locker room of, say, Marty Cordova and go, boy, that's a lot of pills. I better get out the list. All right, let's see. I think I saw a B, whatever, there. That's illegal. You don't do that. You don't take the time to go through the list of hundreds
of
drugs.
If you're paid to be the writer for the team, then you absolutely should know.
Unless you're out on some kind of witch hunt, then fine.
That's not a witch hunt. That's reporting.
But it's
if you see him taking things and you have a question about whether or not they're legal, then it's your job to find that out. That's what a reporter is. Did you go to any journalism classes? My goodness.
But you have to understand that the list has got to be...
But that's your
long.
Job!
But not every day you're writing about the team. There's no time to go, okay, I have to sit down and figure this out right now, right here, right then.
But you don't have to write, okay, I saw it today, this needs to be, my print time's at 10, so if I don't have this story in by 10 o'clock, then that's it. Guess what? Some people spend a lot of time on stories.
So the other thing, too, is that how do they know? I'm going back to the how do they know part, but you look in a locker and you go, okay, the guy's taking some pills. Whatever. How many people take Advil after a game because their knees hurt? Or how many whatever?
Okay, but now you're getting into the fact that, again, that they didn't know. You're telling me that they knew they were doing something. And that all, and you know, and if they knew they were doing something, then it just seems very, very wrong to me that if you knew you were doing something, they were doing something at the time, that all of a sudden now you're going to play gatekeeper, even though you deliberately did not write about this at the time.
But you have to understand their everyday job is to write about the team, and they have to develop close personal relationships with these players, with these coaches, because their job depends on inside access. Now, if you want to be the guys who went Watergate and try to investigate everything that drug-wise is related to, okay. But you're going to lose your job, and you're going to lose your status in the clubhouse.
You're
not going to get the access that somebody else can, because
yeah, you know what's going to happen? You're going to get promoted. Because the guys who did the Barry Bonds stuff, guess what they're doing now? They're investigative reporters for ESPN.
Right, but...
If you break a story like that, that's what's happening.
But you have to understand it with these beat writers, is that their ultimate goal? Do they want to be investigative reporters, or do they want to be the guy that was the beat writer?
Then they're doing a poor job. Then they're not good at their job, is what you're saying. If you're going to have something that's this big of a story related to the team, that somebody is doing steroids, and you're going to say, you know what, I could find this out, but I'm not going to do it, then that goes against everything that you and I were both taught as communication majors and as journalism majors.
That's
going against everything.
But you have to understand, you're working for a paycheck. You're not working because...
And you're telling me that you wouldn't get a big paycheck, that if you wrote this story, that you're not... That story's going to be picked up by Sports Illustrated. That story's going to be picked up by everybody. That's going to be your best-selling newspaper ever.
Right, and then the company sees that. Your paycheck doesn't see the bump because you're the beat writer.
Oh, please.
It's a company
please,
thing.
Daniel, come on.
No.
You're going to tell me that you can't... You can't walk into your editor's office and say, I just broke the biggest baseball story of the decade. I need a raise and I need it now, or I've got this many other papers that are ready to hire me, please, you can't tell me that that's not going to equate to money.
And if the editor looked at them and go, we're happy for you, but here's the reality is that the paper that we sold was one paper. It's not.
But that's how journalists make their, that's how you know the Watergate
journalism
guys.
Journalism integrity is, goes out the window when you need to feed a family, in my opinion. And not integrity to the point where you're
then
talking.
Then find a different job. If you don't have the backbone for it, then find a different job.
They're good at what they do.
No, they're not. They're going against the ethics of the job if they're not reporting on what they see.
I think that a lot of them probably saw what was going on, but they understood that there are things that you go for. There's things that you don't. Paycheck, man. You're talking about feeding yourself. You're talking about having a job. Those things change when you do something like that. You're viewed differently. It's not just, hey,
yeah,
I'm a journalism
asset. How do we view those San Francisco guys? How do we view the Watergate guys who break these big stories?
What are the
you
names,
know how we view
the,
them?
What are the names of the guys who wrote that San Francisco thing? You tell me, right?
Mark Fainaro Wada, it was one of them. And I don't remember the other guy off the top of my head, but I know Fainaro Wada was one of the guys.
Okay, and they're doing what now?
They're the investigative reporters for ESPN.
We're happy for them. Big deal. I mean,
it is a big deal.
It was a big deal for them, and they got whatever out of it. They made a book deal, but that's great. But you have to understand, we're talking about the baseball writers of America here that do this for a living, a majority of them, where it's not that I'm going to bust this story and I'm going to take my career that way. It's a cold reality. I get where you're. I understand you're upset about it, but that's the fact, is that this was probably going on back then, that they were looking at going, yeah, it's fishy, but I don't know how fishy it is. And is it steroids? Oh, it's not steroids. Well, it's, what is this thing? It's legal. Kind of.
Okay,
but they
wrote about that.
But
and
they
then
did.
And then we as consumers of that media kind of chose not to care. So that's on us. But for the other stuff,
and so then why would a baseball writer go, well, if the consumers don't care, then why am I going to write about it? Because you have to sell papers, as you said. If the consumers aren't going, boy, this is crazy, I can't believe he does that, then the guy's going, oh, I guess it really isn't that huge of a deal.
Okay, that's a fair argument right there. That is a fair argument. But I think your argument that they knew and didn't...
I think they had an idea, but I don't know that... I believe that they didn't have the greatest idea or understanding of what they were looking at. They just looked at it and went, well, is it steroids?
Then
you get a doctor or the guy saying, well, no, it's this pill that... Essentially, what it does is it helps me recover. Oh, that's interesting. Is it legal? Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't take it if it wasn't.
And if that's the reporting that you did, then you need a better job. If you're going to ask the guy taking it, is it legal? What's he going to say? No, this is actually really, really illegal, and I could get in huge trouble for this.
Well, then you go to the trainer, and then you do whatever, and he probably did. But then he's not going to go and say, well, it's legal. I mean, you have to understand you're not just dealing with...
If you
Mark
tell me you have to understand one more time, I'm going to reach across this table and slap you.
You're not just dealing with Mark McGwire. All the columnists get to deal with Mark McGwire every day and Sammy Sosa, but the beat writers got to deal with the fact that the Cardinals were in a playoff race that
Dan
year.
Dan Levitard's a columnist, so there's plenty of columnists that are in that, and that's a columnist job. If anyone's going to stir it up, it's a columnist.
And the other part of it, too, and you'll agree with me on this, is that there probably were people that were writing about it going, this is a big deal. Nobody wanted to admit it was a big deal that year in 98 and then further on from there.
In 98, I'll maybe buy it.
And I think even to a certain point, because there are some players out there that are likable enough, I think that you needed the right players to take the steroids in order to hate it so much, because Barry Bonds and Alex Rodriguez are two of the most hated athletes in the history of sports, in my opinion, because... Bonds was not a well-liked guy, and Rodriguez is full of himself. McGwire and Sosa were America's sweethearts.
Yeah.
And it put baseball back on the map. And so you're telling me that there were probably columnists, I'll give you that wrote about it and said, it seems kind of fishy. You know what Americans did with it? Even consumers like you and I went, no, it's not.
I'd be interested to find if you could. I would assume that if there were columns written like that, that they would have been brought up at some point during this whole thing. But and you know what? And that's fair. And if you want to do that, what I'm saying is it's real hypocritical for you to say, you know what? We ignored it because these guys saved baseball, but now we're going to punish them for it and not let them into the Hall of Fame. That's incredibly hypocritical.
And what do you
think? You can't have it both ways.
What do you think baseball's doing now, though, with it? They go, thank you for 1998, but no thank you for using steroids. There's a lot of hypocrisy about it.
Okay.
Which brings us back full circle as to why probably Dan Le Batard looks at it and goes, but we embrace these guys.
Yeah.
Why are we putting them away? We embraced them when it was happening. Which is probably maybe one point he's not really getting out there, is that we're kind of hypocrites ourselves for saying, love what you're doing, but we're not going to put you up in that Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And forgive me, I'm blowing your mind.
I like how you just randomly threw the pen on the mouse there, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
And you know what? And that's fair, because guess what generally doesn't play well in any type of media? Is say, hey, all you fans, yeah, you were morons, and you're a big part of the reason why this happened.
Right.
It doesn't work real well.
That's a good argument. We got after it. Got heated. All right. We got to calm down. We went way long. This is probably one of the longest podcasts we have, but enjoy all of it. It gets really good. ongoing wager. We're tied at 9 currently.
Yeah.
But there might be one coming up to the end of this week that I get to claim.
I need one more coach
to get fired, and I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't either. And then we got our Super Bowl picks, and both of our Super Bowl winners are still alive.
Yes.
If it comes down to Denver versus San Fran, that's going to be a fun couple weeks for us.
It will be.
Yeah.
Because then it's... Yep, that'll be kind of it. We didn't either. I didn't pick Denver to be in there. You didn't pick San Francisco to be in there. We picked one of them.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun. It was good. Good podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the 027 podcast. Again, find us on iTunes, the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Leave a comment on KFGO.com. A lot of things to discuss, whether you agree or disagree with our takes on certain things. Get in on it. Quarterbacks, where you put them. Talked a little bit about the Hall of Fame vote, how that should go. NDSU football, recruits, basketball, that's all in here, so make sure and check it out. Follow us on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm at PintoKFGO, Brad Jones.
At the Bison Guy.
And make sure, again, like I said, to find us on KFGO.com. So, for Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Gunnarsson saying have a wonderful rest of your day.